There's nothing that a white comedian could say about me or any white person could say racistly about me that would ever hurt my feelings. For example, over here, they'll be like, you're brown, you smell of curry. In India, it'll be like, oh, your family's from Kerala. You probably have oily, greasy hair and you smell of fish because all your family can afford to eat is fish. And that is so specific to the culture that it's so much more hurtful because there's some like caste and class stuff thrown in there as well.
Prior to white racism, you've been heavily vaccinated.
Pretty much, yeah. So when you come here and they're like, oh, you smell like curry, it's like, okay.
Hello, welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Comedy with an Accent podcast. I am very glad to invite this comedian. I have a tremendous amount of respect for, and I'll explain why. I'm not just being flattery. This comedian has a massive, massive long credit list. I think to a lot of people who are not comedy nerds or not in the comedy industry, some of this competition winning trophy or credit don't really matter. But this guest I'm having has only done comedy for the last 3 to 4 years. So this is quite impressive. I think the most impressive one is she was the Global Roast Battle International MVP in the year 2023. Is that right?
That is correct.
And you came close to winning again in 2024.
Yeah, so I'm number one roast battler in 2024, but MVP 2023.
What's the difference?
I don't know.
It's okay. I don't think the listeners going to care. No one cares. Right. She has been the winner and or finalist of two comedy clubs that have disappeared. I don't know whether it's a
it's my fault.
It's your own fault. So thank you for giving the final push. Like she's the dagger of smaller comedy competition.
Can I just say those clubs owe people money and it's not my fault.
Not even West End, though, does it?
West End exists still.
No, it's not in the venue anymore.
West End New Act of the Year?
No, West End Comedy Club.
Oh, yeah, they're not linked.
They're not linked. No. Okay, this is not going in because it's a completely irrelevant conversation. Two north down. Yeah, tell me about it. They owe me £700.
They owe you £700. I think they owe so many people so much money. Yeah. They owe, I think, somebody I know about £3,000.
Should I make this like the trailer just to do some social justice when I'm doing this podcast? I think what's worth mentioning is she is the finalist of Sean Lock Comedy Award last year. Yeah. She was finalist in... Actually, were you runner-up for... Yes, you were runner-up in Leicester Mercury Comedian of the Year, a competition I love to be on. I never get recommended by any promoters. I think I have to be a better person in the green room. I don't know why. She was also the Leicester Comedy Festival Circuit Breaker. But beneath all that, she's known to have the most violent yet not aggressive giggle on the comedy circuit. And today, my guest is from India, Shalaka Kuruf. Is that right?
Shalaka.
Yeah. Yes. First... In the Comedy Central live clip, why did you introduce yourself as Corrupt? How do you pronounce your last name?
Corrupt. Yeah.
Yeah. But when you are in America doing the roast battles, quite often you're introduced as like Corrupt. It almost sounds like a drag name, like a Corrupt.
It does,
but
yeah.
You just went with it. You don't have any time to...
I can't be bothered. It's not that deep for me. And the thing is, if they pronounce it in a way that the audience understands...
How to spell, roughly.
How to spell, then they can follow me on Instagram.
That you will live with it.
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying that if you actually pronounce your last name correctly, it will actually prevent people from finding
you. Yeah, because the way I pronounce it, so many comedy... Oh, I was at a gig on Saturday, and they spelled my name wrong, and I'm like, it's on the emails, but they spelled it the way they think it would be spelled based on how it sounds. So it's K-U-R-U-P, but people say Corrupt. They spell it K-A-R-U-P.
I wonder, it's because English is not a very phonetically consistent language and they never had to learn.
It's not a very good language.
Yet it's one of the most fluent languages you speak.
Well, I don't think that's because English is good. I think that's because English people are bad.
Okay, I'm going to do this small anecdote before I come to my first question, because I was watching your Comedy Central clip and I don't know whoever was being put in charge of adding the captions for the clip. Mm-hmm. I don't even know whether the person did it on purpose. You know, you referenced the trendy millennial woman. It's the famous kind of millennial woman shop, Oliver Bonus.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what the subtitle was?
No.
They wrote it down as Oliver Boners, as in...
I didn't even notice that. that. That's
well,
so funny.
To be fair, I was checking the one on Facebook. So yeah. I don't know if it's the same one on Instagram. And I thought, even if you don't know Oliver Bonner's, you should know Bonner yeah. has a sexual innuendo.
Oh my God. I didn't know that. That's so funny.
And that person, I think, must not be paid enough because mm. when you say you are not a doctor on the train, but you're a doctor off the train, yeah. where you put so much focus on the preposition of,
yeah.
they put it down as O double F's.
Oh, come on.
So they would not be paying attention to the joke. They would just be putting down phonetically whatever they think the first word is.
Honestly, I don't even think there's a person doing it. It's probably
AI?
Yeah. It's probably like AI or whatever.
I still think Boners is hilarious.
Boners is great.
Yeah. So Eclipse funny. Your actual set. I don't know what's all that Boners.
Oliver Bonus. I love that.
Cool. Shalaka, I'm going to come to my standard question for my guest.
Mm?
Do you think when you speak English, you have an accent?
I do indeed, but it's not the right one.
What do you mean by the right one?
So I do a lot of code switching for some reason because I'm probably very anxious and insecure, but my accent changes to fit who I'm speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
So most British, not most, a lot of British people think I sound like I'm from Ireland.
Because of the rhotic R? Is that the reason?
The way I say certain words, which is very weird. A lot of people have asked whether I'm from Northern Ireland. I know people think I'm American as well. But if you hear me speak to my parents or Joshua Bethania, my accent changes to my normal accent so quickly.
So what kind of accent would you have when you speak with Joshua?
Like an Indian. Okay, let me imagine his voice.
But Joshua doesn't even have a very thick Indian accent.
But it's like a Bangalore accent. So, Joshua? Why are you acting like this right now?
Oh, yeah, I could hear the intonation changes.
Yeah.
To be fair, what you say is consistent because I listened to a lot of the podcasts you did,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of them were more like comedy nerd style, like, what's your origin story? Like,
yeah,
what's your technique? I wasn't interested in all that because this podcast is about identity, languages, and accent. The one that I feel like I hit a jackpot was Roman Harris when you did the Eulogize
yeah,
Me.
Yeah.
As you say, code switching.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you come across this concept? Do you always know it?
So I used to listen to a lot of NPR podcasts, obviously.
What is NPR?
NPR is like an American radio network. I can't remember what
it's called. Oh, the one had the Tiny Desk concert one?
Yeah, okay. That's the one. But they do a lot of like
diverse. Did you watch
podcasts.
Chaperone's Tiny Little Desk concert?
I really loved it.
I know.
So there's a podcast called Code Switching that I used to listen to for the longest time and I didn't know what it meant. And
yeah.
then finally I looked it up and I was like, oh yeah, I do this. I just thought it was something that was reserved for people in other countries. I never realized that I did it.
So for our listeners who do not understand the mm-hmm. exact definition of code switching, how would you define it? How would you explain this?
So code switching would be kind of molding the way you speak and behave to make yourself integrate into a situation a little bit, a little bit more. So the classic example would be, there's a joke that's been in movies and popular culture, whatever, of black people having a white person voice when they use the phone so that they can get more done because
mm-hmm.
white people are racist. But that would be a classic example of code switching, or how your work voice is different to your home voice, the way you speak to your boss. But code switching is more used in application towards like especially immigrants, who kind of change how they speak in order to fit into the society they've integrated into a little bit more.
So the official definition, does it have to be intentional or can it be subconscious?
Most people do it subconsciously. I think the point is that it's subconscious, but I know it can be done with intentionality as well.
Interesting, because if you ask me, I probably would have defined it as you change the way you speak so you mm-hmm. feel like you're better understood
yes.
by yeah. the person you're speaking to. But I think your definition is better because
yeah.
ultimately it's about trying to fit in and not to be other or rejected. But it works both ways, right? Because
mm-hmm.
you were talking about how a black person will try to sound more white.
Mm-hmm.
But Roman, he said that when he does black gigs, he would
yeah.
talk the sort of more stereotypical, I don't know how I would describe it, like Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
He would use expressions that he doesn't normally use
yeah.
just to come across a very stereotypical version how you think a black person, a black comedian would
yeah.
be.
Similar when I do Asian gigs, especially when I'm hosting, if I'm speaking to the audience, I'll speak in a way that I know is an Indian, especially British Indian way of speaking and communicating. But no one in my family would speak that way?
That's on my list. So for the listener not in the United Kingdom, the South Asian group kind of monopolized the word Asian, and we are trying very hard as East Asian to fight it back. But we haven't managed to get on a BBC Asia network. They are minority, and they are victim, but they're also bullies. It really pissed me off.
That's the other thing, because to me, Asian means everyone from Asia.
Yeah, that's the most...
But then in this country, when you say Asian, you never know what people think.
Oh.
Because, like, people call them Asian gigs, but I would say they're brown gigs.
Or South Asian gigs.
Yeah, South Asian gigs.
Yeah.
But, like, for example, the other day I was talking to someone, they're like, oh, I might get some Asian food for dinner. And I was like, what does that mean?
What does that mean? Yeah, what does it mean?
Do you
mean,
like... I'm like, Asian food could be Indian food, but it could also be Thai food. Like,
yes.
What? Yeah. So I hate the use of the word Asian, but...
And I don't mean to create more division. I think, in general, South Asian and East Asian do get on very well.
Yeah.
But it just... There was a clip, I don't know if you have ever seen it, Ronnie Chang did a bit on The Daily Show when he was a correspondent. Mm-hmm. And he just say that in America, because the situation is kind of reversed. In the UK, the bigger Asian populations are South Asian.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's much smaller East Asian. In America, when you say Asian, especially in California, your first impression on East Asian, people who speak Cantonese or Chinese.
Yeah.
So Ronnie Chang had a bit like, oh, but Indian Americans, since when are you Asian? Mm. If you don't do this, don't try to pretend you are.
Yeah.
And I saw an Indian American comic reply, but my ancestors come from Asia. So if I don't call myself Asian, what am I? And I just thought, it's not a brilliant joke. So I don't think it was worth making it. And they obviously wouldn't apologize over a short little clip.
Yeah.
But I just feel like this usage, why are we here? Because what I meant to say was, yes, you're doing an Asian gig. So basically most of the audience are South Asian heritage.
Yeah.
Indian, Pakistani,
Bangladeshi,
Sri Lankan, for example. And at those gigs, you say you're a certain expression. You use certain expression or mannerism to connect to the crowd.
Yeah.
If it's not too cheeky, can you give us one or two examples?
Yeah, like I was emceeing one of these gigs in Leicester. I was mid-sentence on stage talking. I was like, my mom would cringe at this. Where I was talking to people in the front row and I was talking about this man and his second marriage or whatever. And I was like, oh, uncle's getting a bit naughty. And talking like that.
Yeah.
My parents would never speak that way. Or, for example, I was speaking to this girl who's there with her mom. I was like, oh, I'm doing some naughty jokes. Is mommy okay with you doing that? Because my mommy, she'd be so angry that these words are coming out of my mouth. And all of that's blatantly untrue, but it's a way of like connecting to the audience.
So when you say your mom will be mortified or she will never do it, is it because those are considered a bit too tongue-in-cheek, not polite enough? A well-raised Indian girl is not supposed to talk like that?
Yeah.
Or is it actually kind of misleading? People don't actually do that? What's the reason for her distancing herself on such expressions?
So my mom's very cool. She loves my comedy. She watches my roast battle videos. She's very chill. But what I've noticed about British Indians, which is the community that I know the most about, or British South Asians in general, is they're so conservative, the likes of which I've never grown up with. And it felt harder to...
It feels like a time travel.
Exactly.
Because you thought it would be something you can immediately recognize and reach out. And you realize, hang on a second, we are in the same universe, but I feel there's at least 20 or 30 years difference between us.
Because they all like live it, or their mentalities of India that doesn't exist anymore. So they're so conserved. Like some of the things that I've learned from British South Asian communities, the way they live their lives, are things that... Even my mom didn't experience growing up. It was considered to be so backward and so like traditional and conservative in a way that no one in my, at least immediate family, really experienced.
So if we link back to the example you just did, uncle's getting naughty, that implies in a way men call the shot.
Yeah.
So and women doesn't have the equal status compared to men. And it was taken for granted in India, say, a couple of decades ago.
Yeah.
And when they moved over, the idea, it's the idea of India now, the actual India these days, was frozen in time. Yeah. And they sort of got preserved.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, India is terrible for women even now. But if you were of a certain demographic, I'd say in terms of wealth, in terms of education, in terms of exposure to Western culture, you wouldn't have the same mindset. Like if you took my dad and someone like him in the UK versus India, my dad's leaps and bounds ahead in terms of progressive thought compared to some of these men I've met in the UK, because their minds are still like...
Even though they may be in similar social class or professions.
Exactly, yeah. Because, like, I know Indian men in the UK, the same age as my dad, and they live these lives where their wives do everything, cooking, cleaning, taking care of the kids, and their wives have jobs as well, but they just sit on their ass and do nothing. If my dad tried to pull that shit with my mom, it would be the end of his life.
I hope, listener, if you belong to the second or third generation born in the Western world, you don't feel offended. We are not immediately judging, but we are pointing out what we observe as fresh off the boat. Because Shalaka and I are both first generation immigrants to this country. Yeah. And people immediately lump us together with the second, third generation. And I noticed the difference very quickly myself. I heard it from my Turkish friend when she visited Germany, because Germany has very large Turkish minority. I think these were what they call the guest worker in the 60s and 70s, and they stay. But they tend to come from the poorer, more conservative eastern part of Turkey.
Yeah.
When they moved over, the idea of Turkey also frozen time.
Yeah.
My friend was from the Black Sea region. She grew up in Istanbul, progressive. She doesn't wear the hijab, for example. So when she came across the Turkish community in Berlin, she was shocked at how much a gap there is between her and this group. And I personally experienced that when I went to San Francisco. This is funny because I'm Taiwanese. I always claim that I'm Taiwanese, I'm not Chinese. But for the purpose of the story, I'm going to say, I grew up at a time in Taiwan when we were told to be Chinese. So everything was very China-oriented, the kind of culture, the kind of stuff that was instilled in me. But when I went to San Francisco, Chinatown, I'm like, what the hell is this? Yeah. I cannot imagine. A very simple example. So when I grew up, it's true, there were a lot of corner shop grocery stores, and they wouldn't prioritize the customer's satisfaction. So the aisles would be narrow, the shop would be dimly lit. But by the time, let's say from the late 90s onward, the shop would try to be modern, clean, and bright just to entice people to come in. But those Chinatown places, they were like the places I only remember when I was such a little child, and those stores would not have any way to survive. Even if they got reinvented, they almost become like a gentrified version.
Yeah.
You know, like a romanticized, like a Disney version of nostalgia, but they would never be the same. But the Chinatown seems like it was frozen in time back like 50 years ago.
Yeah, that's very similar to here. Like even the food they eat, even the attitude towards pretty much anything is like insane to me. It's so, backward sounds so derogatory, but it is, because I think it's
not keeping up with time.
But it's also, I say backward specifically because it is not good. Like their views towards women. I know British Indians who moved to the UK, they've got a British passport, and especially some male comedians I met, they say and do shit that I'm like, my dad would slap you. Because it's so, I've had more British Indians be concerned about the fact that I'm living with a white man than anyone in my entire extended family of 400.
Did they insinuate to you that, Shalaka, you're not keeping yourself a pure good girl you're supposed to be? That kind of implication?
So, yeah. Somebody actually said, when you get serious and decide to properly settle down, when is that going to happen? And I was like, I've been with my boyfriend for 7 years. We live together. We own a house together. And they were like, oh, but I mean, he's white.
God.
Which 400 members of my family have not given a shit that I'm living unmarried with a white man and random British Indian men who don't know me.
This is a bit awkward when it comes to the sort of racial, not to say tension, but when you try to say, do not finger point at us because you do not know what it's like. But then sometimes if you don't allow any criticism, do you criticize yourself or your own group enough? Like, does your group even allow that kind of introspective self-criticism? So I remember very closely when I still was a unhappy accountant and I was in training, and there was a guy from a different office sitting just like a diagonal direction before my row. And every day he would bring in some very nice home-cooked food and he would heat it up. And by that time, I've resigned to the idea when I'm in the office, like we just have cold sandwiches. Occasionally, I popped onto Tesco, or I may have a jacket potato. But I would say I will wait until dinner time to really treat myself.
Yeah.
And that guy brings in the home-cooked meal every day. I'm like, oh, did you wake up early to cook this food? And he said, of course not. My mom makes them.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a late 20 man. According to the Asian culture, it is not weird to still live with the parents.
Yeah.
But when I see that, but you are working now and your mom still make your lunch every day. And I say, so why? What happens when you decide to move out, like live on your own? He then say, why would I ever do that? And then he added, I would never leave my home until I find a girlfriend to take over from my mom.
Yep.
And I just thought, we are in the 21st century. Yeah. And to hear that sentence within the office, I was literally shocked.
Yeah, it's like a common trope. Like, I'm surprised it still exists in 2025, but it's a common trope that you meet men who will go from their mom's house to their wife's house and not do a single bit of laundry on the way.
You mean like they carry all the dirty laundry?
No. As in, like, through the entire course of their lives, they will never do laundry, cook, clean, nothing, because their mom's been doing it. And then they live with their mom until they get married. And then their wife does all of it.
Oh, my God. Is that true?
Yeah. When I was at uni, I knew two different South Asian men who chose to move out of halls to live with their parents and then commute into uni. And one of them, his parents were quite rich and he could have shared a flat with people and things like that. And he wanted to, but he was like, oh, it's just too much effort to learn how to cook. So I'm just going to stay at home. It's also this similarly, I think, because this is what I mean when I say it's backwards. You're teaching your boys to continue to, because that's what your parents are like and that's what they think India is like. The men continue to be, dare I say, misogynistic. And the women end up becoming either too independent, where they kind of live with stress their whole lives.
You have to have the rupture from this, mm-hmm, in a way.
Because I know a couple of, like, British Indian friends of mine, even now, I'm 31. They must be like 30, 31 years old, will not make a decision without getting their father to sign off on it because they've never...
Are you talking about girls?
Yeah. It's even something as simple as, oh, I'm going to buy a new car. And they'll need their father to test it, check on it, whatever, because they've just been used to asking their parents for permission to do things their whole lives, that they just don't ever take the initiative to do things on their own without having somebody sign off on it.
Do you feel, I'm hoping I'm not using the verb a bit too strongly, mm-hmm, but do you feel the idea of India or the modern India, mm-hmm, has been hijacked by the representation of this specific group inside the UK, as in people's view of India come less from the Indians who live in India, mm-hmm, but come from the South Asian British?
I think so, yeah, to a certain extent anyway, because people are always shocked when I tell them what India is actually like the
Can you give an example? What kind of actual statement you make, the description, the accurate description you provided about India shocked people here because they're so different from what they had perceived?
One of my favorite examples of this is actually in the opposite. It's not positive, it's negative, where I've met a few separate people who are like, oh, I want to go to India. I want to travel to India. All white people. I want to travel to India. I want to travel around India. My friend's getting married in India. This has happened to three different people I know. We're going with the family and we're going to stay with the family, do the wedding. And then I'm going to go off and travel with my partner by myself for a few weeks. And especially when they say by myself, I'm like, where are you going? It's not safe. India in general is not safe. And they're like, no, my friend said it should be okay. He said India is really modern now. It's really cool. You can travel everywhere quite easy. I was like, all of that is true, but you're a woman traveling by yourself. India is not safe. And they're like, oh, no, but like India's changed. They've said India is different. It's more modern. You have cell signal everywhere. It's all good. And maybe I'm the one being backwards here, but I know for a fact that traveling in India alone as a woman still is not safe. But because the image that's been sold is India's perfect in every single way, the way it was, there's like mixed messaging where it's like India's very conservative, the food's amazing, it's very traditional, but it's also safe. And I'm like, that's the opposite, because India is very modern in a lot of ways, but it's still very unsafe.
But we're talking about they're being given this impression, because those people visited India, they only went back to a specific spot in a city or their village, and they don't actually travel
around.
And they don't keep an eye, they don't read the news about what happened, mm-hmm, in India every day.
Yeah.
So they have a very, removed from context.
Yeah.
Like a postcard version of India and being sold to people over here.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's like a good example. Or on the flip side of things, a classic one is people ask me, are my friends Indian? Oh my God, are your parents like, do they know about your boyfriend? Because my friend's Indian. She said that Indian parents don't let you date outside of your caste. And I was like, outside of my... He is from Sheffield. He is so far outside of my caste.
Yeah.
There's like no crossover whatsoever. And they're like, oh my God, do they know? Do you feel safe to let them know? And I was like, yeah. My parents, this is a new group of people that live in India now, but because you've been sold this marketing. Obviously, don't get me wrong, there are parts of India where I'm very lucky that my parents are like this, but there's no reason why your friends' parents who are living in the UK shouldn't be like this as well. Does that make sense?
Yes, I used to work in office. I would say about a third of my colleagues in that office were South Asian, but a lot of them come from Africa. So they are the Indian diaspora, and about half of them are Gujarati.
Of course.
I remember one colleague say something. She made it sound like she's just joking. Mm-hmm. She didn't mean it. You know, just in a gossipy, slightly mean, a gossip girl way. She say that the other colleague, she's a Shah, you know, they are peasants.
And oh my God.
I'm not saying that caste is needed, but my interest to worry is you can only say this if you've been thinking about this every now and then.
Yeah.
The fact that you still have to pinpoint me who has zero concept of the idea of caste to the ranking between the peasants and the warrior means that you thought about this.
Yeah,
and you either enjoy it or you take pride in it.
Yeah.
Expect the talk would end up talking here about social justice and feminism. So maybe let's wind by a little bit at the Asian gig.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is also interesting talking about context, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you use the same amount of, say, you do the accent, you do this expression at a gig, which is non-Asian gig, and doing at an Asian gig, these are complete different contexts. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned on Roman's podcast, you'd feel slightly uncomfortable doing those at a white gig, as if you're selling out.
Yeah.
Can I interpret that? You feel like you are being a clown that only reinforces a stereotype if you do it to a non-Asian audience.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Also, I think this is very personal to me because Joshua talks, regardless of what gig he's doing, he talks in the same way. I don't know why I do this. I don't know why my voice changes. Like, it would be a conscious effort for me right now to talk in like my Bangalore voice.
Mm-hmm.
This just happens. I think if I was doing the kind of crowd work I do at an Asian gig, at a white gig, I'd have to forcefully switch it on. I'd have to be like, okay, your mother's here. You're arguing with your mother. Like, create a scenario in my head to make myself sound that way. And then turn it on to go on stage.
It's like, even if you talk yourself into doing this, even if you intend to do this, it doesn't even come that natural. It's just like finger snatch.
No, I'd have to reposition. Because I would have been sat in the green room chatting to other comedians who have British or American accents or whatever.
And so, your accent would turn anglicized by that point.
Yeah, it would become anglicized. So then to turn it back again, I'd have to really make an effort to, and that's why, especially why it would feel like I'm doing some clownery.
That is interesting. I'm going to point out, because Shaka mentioned on other podcasts, people accuse her of amping up the accent just to make jokes funnier.
Yeah.
And she initially thought, no, I wouldn't do that. It's only through watching the clips that, oh my God.
Yeah.
And your conclusion was that if you get nervous on stage, you have less control over your accent.
Yeah.
And your accent will then come out stronger Indian because you are having less control over your whole body, basically.
Yeah, that's literally it. So when I'm scared or nervous, you can tell because regardless of who I'm speaking to, my voice has gone way more Indian.
But there's also another fact. You came to the UK at the age of 18, which means that you spent about 40% of your life trajectory right now in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think your Indian accent when talking to non-Indian people is so light that had I not lived in the UK, I wouldn't have figured out where you're from.
Yeah.
I know you're not from the UK. I know you're not from America, actually, if you pay attention to it. But I am not actually sure that slightly sort of deviating sound where those come from. I wouldn't have worked it out because my idea of an Indian accent would be a lot stronger.
Yeah.
And I think for all the first generation Indian comics I know, you probably have the lightest accent, I think. But is it because you spend the last 12 years in this country?
I think so. But I know people who spend longer here who still have the Indian accent.
Yeah.
My theory is, and this is not like a trauma dump, I'm perfectly fine with it. When I first moved to the UK, one of the people I lived in halls with used to make fun of the way I spoke and pronounce things all the time.
Was this the racist friend that you befriended?
Yeah. but because of that, I think I started to work really hard at getting my accent as close to British.
Oh no, that's the wrong message we're sending out to people.
don't. This is trauma. This accent is trauma. I got made fun of so much that I started to like almost mimic the people around me.
Mm.
But obviously, because I'm not great at accents, I could never have a full British accent. So it kind of gets caught.
You got one of those in-betweeners, basically.
And one of those accents, like, again, it's like the code-switching aspect of you say things in a way that make people understand what you're saying a little bit more, which is sometimes probably why I pronounce things in more of an American way, because everyone understands an American accent.
Yeah, you say Gen Z, you don't say Gen Z, for example.
I don't say Gen Z, yeah. No, I say Gen Z.
But you just pronounce whatever way that was like sold to you. You don't really say that I belong to this system. I have to stick to the coherent pronunciation of this system.
I'm accent fluid.
Just to give people a little bit of context, so Shalaka talks about when she was nice and naive and young, she befriended a person who was actually racist to her all the time without you realizing it. She said she thought it's like a genetic condition, like British people are just born racist and there's nothing they can do to cure it. Yeah. I cannot believe you put up with shit like that. So an example you gave was when she realized you were dating your current white boyfriend, she said to your boyfriend, now that you're dating her, every night is a curry night then. Yeah. This is like blatant and also entry-level bad racist. It's not original.
This isn't my current boy. It was an ex-boyfriend.
He was an ex-boyfriend.
He also ended up being a little bit racist.
Okay. So you don't want Douglas to get the wrong idea. Not you. Sorry. I think I only met you once briefly. So sorry. I didn't know.
No, this is an ex-boyfriend. I genuinely thought it was just the way British people are. I was like, you're a bit
rude. You don't put up with it. No. I learned to fight back when I was working because there's HR. Yeah. I mean, if anything, those useless people are being paid, I'm gonna get them to do some actual work.
Yeah.
So once I was talking to another Chinese British lady who's about like half of my height. Mm-hmm. She also wear glasses, but okay, we're both overweight, but she's half my height. Mm-hmm. We can't be the same. And I saw two English lady giggling and I asked them, what's so funny? And one of them say, oh, I saw a double. And that went straight to HR. And everyone in my team say that it's just banter. You know, it was back in 2010-11 and I insisted. I almost say that because we had like a head of department and we also have someone who's like a mommy of department that deal with all the soft issue or HR issue. And she's trying really hard to say, oh, they didn't really mean it. But I think we're just another Northern English woman trying to defend two other Northern English women. No, actually one was Welsh. No, this doesn't really matter. But then I had to insist, no, that was racist.
Yeah.
It's not right for them to say so. And also, we are not even like in a pub, like an after work drink.
Yeah.
We were actually in the middle of the day in the office.
Yeah.
I don't think like company these days will allow such behavior because I would say Generation Z are a lot more insistent on fighting for what they think is right.
I think so. I think you can get away with that shit now.
Having said that, this racist does help you. Is it useful, do you think, having this Indochina accent compared to a much thicker Indian accent?
Is it useful? I don't think it is particularly useful. I don't think it makes much of a difference.
I agree. I always wonder, my accent is the same. Mm. Why would I get praise from some people but criticism from some others at the same time?
Yeah.
And the conclusion I got, as the saying goes in English, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Yeah. And I think accent is in the ears of the listener, right? If you always believe I'm not one of you, you always want to exclude me. However hard I try, I will always not be enough for you.
Yeah.
But if you are happy to embrace me with open arms, even I have a much thicker accent, they're not going to be a problem because you will try to accommodate and to reach out to me. So
yeah, honestly, it might, maybe I'm just, it's a grass is greener, but I think it might even be easier if I had more of an Indian accent while talking to people.
Can you elaborate on this point? Why?
Since I get less white men coming up to me being like, oh, did Americans teach you English? I hate that. Or being like, oh, do you go to an American school? Or, oh my God, I couldn't even believe that you're Indian, but it sounds negative. Like, I hate all of those types of comments. And if I did have an Indian accent, I wouldn't get them.
Why do people feel they're entitled to say things like that?
People feel entitled to say all sorts of
shit. You've been accused of faking the Indian accent.
Yeah, I have. So many times. Even that, I'm like, whatever.
Is it just human nature? Like, we must conform to what you think, where we should belong. Mm-hmm. And But do you get the other side of comments from the Asian audience? Like, why don't you sound Asian enough for us?
When I do an Asian gig, I do. Because it literally just turns.
Do they just shout it out during your comedy routine or do they approach you after?
No. I don't get those comments. When I do an Asian gig, I sound more Indian.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just being in the atmosphere, speaking. Because a lot of the time, there'll be someone else in the lineup who sounds a bit Indian.
Mm.
Especially if I'm hosting, you go on and you're like, how are you doing? Speak to people in the audience. They sometimes have more of an Asian accent and then it kind of just goes from there. So for all intents and purposes, I just have a slightly anglicized Indian accent.
But you know, like between these two ends of the pendulum, I think there is a third possibility. That is, people try to stick so much to the perceived stereotype of your ethnic group or your cultural group, you end up not using the actual or correct one. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that makes sense to you. So let's imagine, because of the popularity of Uncle Roger, yeah, a lot of his expression, hiya, fool yeah you, some of them do get more generic sort of Asian, but a lot of them are very Cantonese specific. Mm-hmm. So what I would observe and notice is that I don't know whether they are first generation or second generation Chinese, and they can be Chinese British, Chinese American. These comedians, they will use the same sound that Uncle Roger make, even though they don't speak Cantonese themselves.
Yeah.
Because as far as I know, in China, when you're from different provinces, there are different what they call dialect or languages, and the sound will be slightly different. So there are certain sounds I make, they are quite similar to Chinese people from the South. There are certain sounds we do make indeed, but I would not make exactly the same kind of specific sound like Uncle yeah Roger, because he speaks a language that I don't speak. And some people feel like if you do those sounds, you get much closer to the popularity of Uncle Roger and you get recognized. And also because of Uncle Roger, those sound has become what people think all East Asian people speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a similar case for South Asian acts.
What I will say is now, with the state of British comedy, what's really good is there's more distinctive South Indian voices. So Joshua, for example, is a great South Indian voice. Mm. He speaks in a South Indian accent. I would say in the past, there's been a trend of, I've seen South Asian comedians do voices or accents in a way that kind of mimics North Indians. So even if you're a South Indian comedian or you're from Bengal or whatever, you'll speak in a way that's more Bollywood-y when they're talking.
What do you mean a Bollywood-y? It's
the
first time I hear this word being turned into an adjective.
I'm trying to describe. It's a lot of like Mumbai slang, a lot of Punjabi words.
Okay. Sort of even thing. Though you are my fifth guest from India, given that your country is so massive, I'm going to recap. There are tons of official languages in India.
Yeah.
Hindi, being one of the official languages, actually comes from the north. Shalaka comes from Bangalore or Bengaluru, as is not known in India. Mm. Your parents speak Malayalam.
Yeah.
That's from Kerala, from southwest coast, right?
Yeah.
But you grew up in
Bangalore.
Yeah. You used to speak a bit of Malayalam when you were a child, but you grew up predominantly speaking English.
Yeah.
People in the south of India do not speak like people from the north, but people outside India don't care. So it's a massive country with over a billion people. How many people are there in India?
Definitely over a billion.
Yet we would think there was just one accent and there's just one language for this massive, massive, vast country.
The best example of this is Russell Peters when he got really big. This was many, many, many years ago. You'd see a lot of other South Asian comedians. Comedy wasn't that big in India, but you'd see other South Asian comedians from like the UK or the US do that same sort of thing where when they're, especially my pet peeve, describing their parents and conversations with their parents, doing a Russell Peters voice.
Yeah.
The Russell Peters voice is like, somebody gonna get hurt real bad. And then you'd see them do their parents' voice in a similar fashion, because that's like what people expect an Indian parent's voice to sound like.
Where does Russell Peters' sort of family come from in India?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I... So because of Joshua, I know there is this ethnic group in India where they have an anglicized name, right?
Yeah.
But I once saw a clip and Russell Peters was roasting an East Asian member of audience.
Mm-hmm.
And he says something like, I don't know the actual name, but he says something like John, but you're not supposed to be called John.
Yeah.
I'm like, coming from the brown man called Russell. do you not feel the irony of, I don't know, maybe just tongue in cheek, I don't know. But I say this so many times, I try to avoid saying this, but I always thought he had a bit of issues that he needs to deal with. People think he's a really great comedian. I'm making fun of stereotype, but I honestly think he thinks himself better than his father. You can smell the kind of superiority from the second generation who considered himself to be better integrated than their parents.
Yeah.
So I feel like when he was making fun of his father's accent, it's not fully out of love. There's a little bit of sort of...
That's what annoys me about... I think there are comedians who do their parents' voices that do it really well. So it's not like everyone who does it sucks.
Yeah.
But the large majority of comedians who imitate their parents' voice is what you're doing is you're doing a voice that makes the audience laugh at your ethnicity rather than the joke that you're telling.
Yeah, I agree. I think the test is always ask yourself, are they laughing with you or are they laughing at you?
Because I would say, is it Dinesh Nathan? He does his mom's voice, but it's so much of a character. That's what's funny. The character is funny. The way their interactions are, that's funny. So I would say that was an exception. But I've seen other comedians do their parents' voice and it's like, nope, you're just doing a funny voice because that joke's not funny enough for the kind of laugh.
I think so. For example, when Sindhu V talks about her mom, that ridiculous, mean nature of her mom is so specific.
Yes.
You're thinking about that one woman, but not all the Indian women or not all the Indian culture, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's a great example.
About you being the Roast Battle International MVP, and given that you are not white and you're not a man, how people attack you on stage is pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I don't even know if we should cover the Roast Battle bit, but I feel like this is like so part of your CV. I think not everyone watch Roast Battle, but Roast Battle are comedians who traded insult at each other, but it's with consent.
Yeah.
And actually prior to the preparation, they will share the bit of information that people can make fun of. And they turn the idea or the fact into a joke. I've never done it myself. I don't know. Maybe it's a cultural difference. The Roast Battle for me is a very American thing.
Yeah.
In my language, we have a way of describing certain behaviors, basically. Oh, this person has not been raised properly by their family. And I feel like the kind of conduct you engage in Roast Battle is what I would consider people like bottom barrel of humanity, of human nature.
That's fair.
But at the same time, it's such a good occasion to test the comedian's ability to write succinct and very strong, powerful jokes. So I don't know how to feel about it, but I have all the respect, embrace it, because it's a very male-dominated environment.
Yeah.
To an extent, I think ignorance are being celebrated doing roast battles. I've watched a clip when people just go after your Indian heritage and just like imitate the Indian accent. And I know by doing this, you've agreed to being made fun of. But does it ever, are you just like numb or used to it? Or you think like they're just all part of the game?
I think it's all part of the game. And also, my favorite thing about white racism is that because it's so steeped in not that much knowledge about a culture.
Yes.
It's not very hurtful. Does that make sense? Because
there was one joke directed at you and I thought, no, what you're describing is what people would do in Pakistan rather than in India.
Yeah.
So you're not even getting your facts right.
Yeah.
And then I saw the audience laughing with it and I just thought, God, this is what I meant. I said the bottom barrel of humanity.
I would say there's nothing that a white comedian could say about me or any white person could say racistly about me that would ever hurt my feelings. Because when you grow up in India, the racism between different types of Indian people is so much more vicious.
Oh, I didn't expect that. I thought that after you came here for university, you've experienced all that. I said, no, it's before that.
Yeah. So for example, over here, they'll be like, you're brown, you smell of curry. In India, it'll be like, oh, your family's from Kerala. You probably have oily, greasy hair and you smell of fish because all your family can afford to eat is fish. And that is so specific to the culture that it's so much more hurtful because there's some like caste and class stuff thrown in there as well.
So you're saying that this is the experience you had when you grew up in Bangalore?
I mean,
because Bangalore is a melting pot. Like people from different states in India, especially southern India, would concentrate in Bangalore.
But that's why there's so much room for novel. Like, so in India, there's so many like very specific stereotypes about people from different parts of India. Oh, you're from Delhi. You're probably a sleazy man. You're from Punjab. You're probably stupid. None of this is true, by the way. These are all like stupid.
You say that prior to white racism, you've been heavily vaccinated.
Pretty much, yeah. So when you come here and they're like, oh, you smell like curry. It's like, okay, so what?
Do you know where I heard that comment before? I heard that comment from a second generation South Asian colleague that described the Indian tourists.
Oh, they smell of curry.
Yeah. She was saying this to two middle-class white girls.
Yeah.
I think for her, it's a way of surviving.
Yeah.
I was standing on the side looking at those brown girl who talked to two white girls about how smelly the Indian tourists. Like, which universe do I live in? Like, but I think she might have been bullied, I don't know, at school. And she thought by protecting her, she would convince herself that she's essentially white because she grew up in this country.
Yeah.
So there's nothing between her and the Indian tourists that are like at all. Like, yeah. They are complete separate. I don't know. Attacking others as a way of protecting oneself.
Yeah.
That's really, really sad.
Yeah. I've seen tons of people do stuff like that. They're like, oh, these Indian people, they'll come in with 20 people, get on the bus and listen to music loudly on their phones. And it's like, you're also Indian, my friend. Like, what are you doing?
And also, everyone does this.
Yeah, I know. This is not
if there's anything
people.
That unite all races, it's rude behavior in public transport.
Yeah.
So you're saying actually that laziness and stupidity makes their attacks more predictable, right?
Yeah.
Because you know they're going to go after your Indian heritage. So you have all the rebuttal you can prepare in advance. And
yeah. Like if I'm roasting a white man or doing a roast battle with a white man, I can predict there'll be one joke about how I'm short, one joke about how I'm Indian.
One joke about how you look like Velma from Scooby-Doo.
Velma from Scooby-Doo.
I didn't know what she looks like. I had to Google. I said, that's spot on.
And then one joke about how I'm dating a white man. I'll know the jokes that are coming up.
Are these the one you offer to them? Because you have to exchange information before.
No, I give them tons of facts, but it's just really easy to make fun of, like...
I mean, like, even you can do accent really well. Saying something about you and then do a very stereotypical Indian accent. For roast battle, that's really lazy and lame,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Because I give them tons of facts about me. I'm like, I have 3 tattoos. I used to do pool fitness.
You have a tattoo about the railway passenger.
Yeah, this one.
Your Instagram account, for example, you don't really try to create an image like you are that Indian comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Being Indian is almost accidental. If I had to describe your voice comedically, you portray yourself more being an enthusiastic nerd.
Yeah.
And you try to reflect the millennial angst. And that's the 2 things I noticed from your show. And it's refreshing. I mean, obviously, we all have 1 or 2 short lines. We always have to explain our accent, where we come from. But I think one of your most comfortable openers has nothing to do with you being an immigrant or Indian. It's the choo-choo joke.
Yeah, it's about having a PhD in trains.
And a lot of your most viewed clips on Instagram also have nothing to do with you being Indian or trying to correspond to or conforming to the stereotype white people had on Indian people.
Yeah.
And I think that is so refreshing.
Thank you. I think it's because I don't feel like being Indian is not a personality trait. Does that make sense? I'm Indian. I'm also a woman. You know, it's like the same shit to me. It doesn't feel like anything that's special. And obviously it is. I'm a minority or whatever. But it doesn't feel special enough to have to be addressed.
Yeah, but technically it's a shortcut.
It is.
It's very efficient. So there's a temptation that, writing a good joke is so difficult. Just let me lean in.
Yeah, for sure. It's almost like I don't know what I would say. Because like all the things that I would say about being Indian on stage are all things that I think they would want me to say. But then it would just be me writing a joke for anybody rather than for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what I would say about me being Indian that would be interesting.
So when did it strike you? This is not what I want to say. I know this is what the audience wanted to hear, but I have no interest in that. When did you realize that?
I think a couple of years back when I started moving from fives into I used to do that Gandhi bit quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, I don't enjoy this because it's just a meme from the internet.
Because Gandhi was one of the few things people know about India. Yeah.
And I was like, I don't find this fun or interesting, so I'm just going to stop doing it. And then there's a scary bit where you start bombing for a bit because you're not doing all the like safety.
Safe jokes.
And then now I feel much better. I think it's easier to be weird than it is to be Indian in order to get an audience's attention on you.
How often do you face the resistance from the audience? Like, why are you telling me about millennial stuff? I want to hear about Indian stuff because I saw you.
Yeah.
I saw your ethnicity. This is what I expect from you. Why are you telling me generic topics which I think should be covered by other white acts?
It's more often than I'd like, I think.
So it does happen.
It does happen, But it's also like, I'm looking forward because social media is getting bigger. Not that I have tons of followers, but comedy is getting more globalized. So I'd rather work and wait for an audience that likes my comedy.
So is it a debate you've been having with yourself over the last few years?
Yeah, I've had so many gigs where I've just been like, I didn't enjoy that. I didn't enjoy myself. I didn't enjoy being here. Because even when you bomb, sometimes you're like, oh, well, the audience was nice. And it's a bit of a challenge. We're like, oh, can I get them back?
Mm-hmm.
Can I do something? Oh, they like this. They didn't like this. Figuring the puzzle of figuring it out is quite fun. But there's just some gigs I've done where I'm like, I never want to do that again. I don't want to be there again. I don't want to be around these people again. life is short. You know, why be unhappy? I know.
I don't think they're evil, but we're just not made for each other.
Exactly. And I know a lot of comedy is like growing in front of different audiences, and I'll keep doing that. I'm tired of pandering, I think.
I've had a different approach. I think mine is a bit more compromised. So I've also been sold the same thing. You have to be able to gig anywhere in the UK.
Yeah.
So one day when you start to tour, then whatever town will welcome you. And I've tried to accommodate it by doing the more stereotypical racial stuff, explaining myself at the start. And once I feel like they can accept me, then I would go on to a more neutral subject. Yeah. But as you say, I start to wonder, is that really necessary? I mean, I feel great about being able to do different gigs. But ultimately, there are sometimes I see certain part of the crowd, I just thought, I don't think anything I do will win over the last 5 to 10% because they simply do not like the idea of me. Is it necessary or is it even time efficient, cost efficient to try to convert these people when there are still billions of people out there? And I don't even need a billion. I just need a few hundred thousand.
Yeah. And also sometimes I have the thought where I'm on stage and I'm like, maybe you would have hated me as much just because I'm a woman, you know? So even if I'd done all my Indian stuff, you would have still hated me because I'm a woman. So what's the point? At what point will I stop compromising? Maybe I just want to talk about chess. Let me talk about chess.
Have you performed in India before?
I've never performed in India.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Because you came here at the age of 18 and you had part of your formative years in the UK. Yeah. You even represented UK in the global roast battle leagues. So people would have found you from India online. What's your interaction with them like?
This is funny. No one ever DMs me on Instagram apart from other comedians.
Really?
Yeah, I never get DMs. And I mean, maybe once in a while. The only DMs I've got have been from other train nerds or British people. But it's very rare. Like, it's very rare for me to get a DM on Instagram.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
that's funny because for me, I've been getting more and more direct feedback from Taiwanese people.
Really?
No, either living overseas or living in Taiwan. But I think part of my comedy, I go into politics very specifically to promote my country, and that wins over certain people back home.
Yeah.
You know, what we talk about, the idea of India being, I wouldn't say fetishized, but being distorted. Have you ever tried to, not say correct, but try to sell the image of modern India, incorporate a bit more?
I have. When I first started out, I tried. But now, because I haven't lived in India for so long, and when I speak to my parents who live in India or my cousins who live in India, their version of India now is so far removed from my memory of India from when I was 18.
So you are having that gap yourself right now.
Yeah, I have the gap myself. So I feel like anything I would say would be about India in the late 90s, early 2000s that isn't really applicable anymore. In doing that, I'll be doing the same thing that they're doing here, where I'll be like, oh, India's like this. And then
another generation of Indian look at that, is it?
Yeah, exactly. You don't even live here. And it's a fair critique. I don't live there. What do I know?
Yeah.
Like when I go back and visit and I'm like, oh my God, Bangalore's looking great. This is great. This is great. And my dad's like, Modi's in power. Nothing's good. And I'm like, oh yeah, I forget because I don't live here. It doesn't impact me. Like, shut up. You know?
That is so true though. I visit Taiwan about once a year. I remember one year I went back and the convenience store, basically like a Tesco Metro, like a smaller supermarket. And the clerk just asked me, do you need a carrying tool? I'm saying, what the F are you talking about? I've never heard that term in Mandarin before. Then I realized is that you can download an app on your phone because in Taiwan in the old day, we printed out the receipt. You have to buy the official paper roll from the government. The receipt will have a sequence number and it's a free lottery. You can collect your receipt and you just match numbers. So if like the last 3-4 digits match, you get a couple pounds from the government.
What?
And then to facilitate reduction of paper use, they start to issue electronic receipt.
Right.
So if you download the app, that the receipt goes straight into your app. And every 2 months when the government announces the winning number, the app will calculate for you whether you win anything at all.
That is everything about this concept is amazing.
It's blowing my mind. The nerd aura is now in flame. So basically he's asking me, do you have the app for the electronic receipt?
Right.
And they came up with a very ugly sounding Mandarin term for that. And I haven't lived in Taiwan for such a long time, had zero idea what the person was talking about. Of course, I learned it very quickly from asking a friend. But I think that's just an example. Like, my idea of my home country is not up to date sometimes.
Yeah, same. Like, my mom, I'll go back and she's like, yeah, we'll just pay for this on Paytm. And I was like, what the hell is Paytm? And they have all these online payment platforms. And I'll be like, oh, I'll just get an Uber. And my mom's like, well, you can get an Ola. And I'm like, what's an Ola? What is this? And my mom's like, I was like, oh, I'll just flag down an auto rickshaw.
Yeah.
Like those tuk-tuk type things that we have in India. My mom's like, oh, no one flags them.
Yes, yes. Them you can't just hail a cab. You have to call.
Yeah.
You have booked them.
This is not, it's got three wheels. What do you mean order it on an app?
Like, and so maybe 20, 30 years ago, not being your own country 1 year is fine. Yeah. But with how fast technology is changing, I think sometimes just not being in the country a couple of months makes a whole lot of difference.
When I was growing up, we had a guy who worked at the corner shop who, if you called him, he'd deliver stuff to your door.
Yeah.
But my mom now does like how you do a Tesco delivery, big shop. My mom does one of those at home. But anytime she wants something, so she'll just order like six things and it'll get delivered on the same day to our house. And I'm like, what is this? This is the India that I don't experience.
Yeah.
So when I'm like, oh, we used to have tons of trees in Bangalore. Like, what am I saying? I have no actual knowledge of what it's like to live there.
And you went back, the trees are all cut down, and a new neighbor who has been delivered, example.
Yeah.
Right. I know I haven't fully covered the roast battle bit, but I think I've expressed not my disdain, but it would be hilarious and ironic if 1 year I decided to do it. And then, is it Pat? Pat Parker?
Pat Parker, yeah.
Yeah, Pat would just be like, oh, I thought you looked down on us. Why are you even doing this? So, no, I'm going to skip it. I would just say Shalaka is going to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival with her wonderful solo show. Mm-hmm. You're doing a bit more work in progress in London before.
Yeah.
How do people find you on social media so we can get all the information?
Follow me on Instagram on @ShalakaKurup. You'll figure out how to spell that.
KURUP. It should be Kurup, but Shalaka. Right. I think that's enough time for the recording today. Great. Thank you so much for coming on
the show. Thank you.
If you like the episode, please follow us and give us some like on social media. Otherwise, I wish you a very lovely day. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.